Marshall Karen Sisko, she finds herself being attracted to Foley and has second thoughts about bringing him in because she understandably wants a slice of Clooney. So this movie is about that very odd but surprisingly hot relationship. Basically, I consider this the sexiest movie ever made. Clooney is basically Cary Grant. That's what's happening here. He's the gentleman thief. If George Clooney made me gay, J-Lo brought me back.
Right, okay.
Is this a rom-com, basically, guys?
If you're going to pass it off as a rom-com, this is the only one where one of the characters shoots themselves in the face falling up some stairs. Hello, everybody. Joining us today, we have Wayne.
Hey there.
Paul.
Hello.
And as always, Kobe.
Hello.
And we're here to review Out of Sight.
Thank you, as always, to the Mighty People for the mighty, mighty tunes. And thanks to Ben from Rockwood Audio for his awesome editing skills.
Please do remember to write a review and rate us on Apple Podcasts and anywhere you can do where you listen to the podcast, because it really does help us.
And you can join in the conversation with us on Twitter
at FlixWatcherPod and on Instagram
at FlixWatcher.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to this episode of Flix Watcher Podcast. Joining us remotely today, we have Wayne and Paul. If you would like to say hello and tell the listeners a little bit more about who you are and what you do, please.
Sure. Paul and Wayne, that's us. We have the Countdown Podcast, where we pretty much count down weirdly kind of, lists of movies, whether it's usually quite complex. It's not just our favorite this or favorite that, but odd little themes. And we also review movies, obviously it's been a little quiet lately with no new movies, but so we're doing classics and stuff like that. But basically, it's a comedy movie review podcast, and frankly, it's a little wild on occasion.
Not safe for work.
Yes, it's there's cussing.
Well, tell one thing, you've chosen Wayne, you've chosen Out of Sight.
Oh yeah.
And I remember, I can't remember when this episode was. I'm pretty sure you did like an episode of best film and TV couples. Mm. And the couple in this was your number one choice. Is that right?
Yep.
Is that, do I remember already?
Good memory, sir.
Yeah, man, that's impressive. I couldn't remember that. But yes, I am totally shipping J-Lo and George Clooney.
There's no need to ship because they get together in this, isn't it? This shipping's more of a kind of Mulder and Scully.
Oh, is it aspirational? I see, sorry.
Unrequited.
I thought I just supported the relationship. Okay. This is my favorite. Paul has heard me wax about this movie quite a bit. Basically, I consider this the sexiest movie ever made. And not to put too fine a point on it, I say this is the perfect date movie. Fellas, if you're out there and you're my age, I'm 45, and for some reason you're still dating.
Likewise.
I suggest you throw this bad boy on, okay? It can only do good. Then again, if you're quite young people, I don't know what you guys watch.
So you've chosen it because it's a perfect date movie. Give us a synopsis in a minute or less, then, Wayne.
Absolutely. This movie's about Jack Foley, George Clooney, who is the most successful bank robber in the country. But he does get caught from time to time, landing him in jail. He's in jail, and on the day he actually busts out of jail with the help of his buddy, which is played by Ving Rhames, he's forced to kidnap U.S. Marshal Karen Sisko, played by J-Lo, in order to avoid getting caught. So that leads to like a cat and mouse game of Foley trying to escape the law and Marshal Karen Sisko, who's hunting him down. The thing is, Marshal Karen Sisko, she finds herself being attracted to Foley and has second thoughts about bringing him in because she understandably wants a slice of Clooney. So this movie is about that very odd but surprisingly hot relationship. Big fan, big fan.
Paul, what are your thoughts on that? I'm guessing that Wayne brings it up in as much as possible.
Yeah, it's like I've seen this film twice, but I feel like I've seen it 4,000 times. Look, it's a interesting film, and it really relies upon, can you get behind a U.S. Marshal somehow falling for a guy who literally A, forced her into the boot of a car, and then B, is an escaped prisoner / lifetime criminal.
It was a different time.
Whilst covered in mud and tar and whatever.
Yeah, so if you can buy that, and that's the whole either strength and success of the film or its failure, depending where you get to, this film's entertaining, I'll give it that. but can you get behind the central?
I'll concept? Buy it twice, Paul. Okay, it's not like Under That Mud isn't any George Clooney. I'm just saying, right?
I guess the casting had to be right for both characters, right? For yeah, them to,
for sure.
If you can get behind it, it's not going to be, you know, Woody Allen and a woman I don't want to name, but it has to be the right people for this.
I'm now imagining that movie out of sight with Woody Allen.
We're skirting around it, but can we just talk about George Clooney? Because he's the best looking bank robber ever, possibly.
Oh my God, so he's beautiful.
I've got a lot of time for George. I'm a big ER.
Oh, right. So, okay, good.
And it's really interesting, you know, this is a guy who really struggled to make it. Mm. And, you know, he was kind of in his late 30s, I think, when he was doing ER. Mm. And he kind of struggled really to
break all hope, guys.
Properly. So this was kind of his first proper sort of film. And he'd sort of done From Dusk Till Dawn, which was kind of a little bit of a cult film. He hadn't really broken through. And I think he was doing Three Kings after this. And this wasn't really a big hit because it was just terribly marketed, really awfully. But I really love him in this. It's got that George sparkle that, it's kind of underneath the Nespresso advert, but not quite. It's just, you know, why are you doing this, George? You don't need to do this. But it's really sparky. And I do buy this.
There you go.
I do buy it, that.
Yes!
In a truck with George Clooney. Yes.
Do you buy this, Paul?
Come on, man.
Yeah.
Yes, you do.
When you compare, I guess what the film does is very cleverly emphasize she's not good with picking relationships.
Yes.
Like, so she's involved with Rainey the Collette. Michael Keaton cameo. And he turns up and is completely clueless as to how inappropriate he's being. And I really love the dad in this film. Dennis Farina is fantastic.
Yeah,
and the way he's kind of giving him subtle shit. And initially, Ray doesn't get it. Mm. And then when he does get it, he's like, what you going to do? You know, so.
Well, just a note on that character. Ray Nicolette, obviously is actually the same character that Michael Keaton played in Jackie Brown.
Gotcha. Yep.
And this is the only time that anyone can really think of that that's happened, where a character has reprised his own role and that character in a separate film, and it's out of that franchise, just written by the same guy.
Yeah,
and that's just kind of cool. I thought it was cool. He did that part for free.
It is, yeah. I think the part there is it's two different studios making that, because obviously you've got just different instances of the same character from books played by different people, but the same character across studios, because studios just seem to want to make things difficult, right?
Absolutely.
But this is that one case. They'll let Michael Keaton come in for 3 minutes to do his scene to make that claim.
He did it for free. Like, they just asked him, so did you do this? Yeah, cool. Came in for a day and did it. Boom. So that's just
cool. Why not?
Yeah.
Keaton's a good guy.
He is. He really is.
The thing about me with Clooney is I don't know why, but I still underrate him. I continue to underrate him. As like, he's not a draw for me in a film, but every time I've seen a film, I'm like, well, he's amazing.
Yeah, right?
And I still don't know why it's a thing for me that he's not like, for me personally, I know for other people like Helen, he's like Clooney in a film is a big draw, but he's got range. He's like, can be really tough. It can be really funny. I love him in even, you know, when he's in Coen Brothers films, he's absolutely hysterical and he seems to be enjoying that. And he's got great comic timing, but he's also got great dramatic chops as well. And I still don't know why I don't rate him. I do rate him, but I don't feel like he's a big cinematic draw. Does anyone else feel that way, or can anyone explain that to me? Or is that just because?
Yes, I think I know. I think you've been Batman and Robin. I think that's what happened.
I was going to say ER'd, but okay.
Yeah, he's fine. Yeah. He's fine. Right? But it's like Batman and Robin is just, that's career ending. And then he came out of it, but, you know, he's always apologizing about that film. And seriously, yeah, it seems like such a bad decision. It could have colored your entire view of his filmography.
Maybe he's just too good looking.
Agree. How hard must it be for that man to walk through the world looking like
that? I'm not sure who's George Clooney harder here, Helen or Wayne. It's really close.
I'm happily gay for Clooney. I don't care.
Fair enough. I actually think, though, if we're going to throw out there the attractive awards, I think J-Lo is really good, really hot in this film, too.
Look, I see. Good segue. If George Clooney made me gay, J-Lo brought me back.
Right. Okay.
J-Lo, though. I mean, have you seen Hustlers?
Yes.
Yes. I mean, yeah.
Because this, I remember seeing Out of Sight. Again, I like J-Lo. I think she's great, but I never really saw it. But then I saw Hustlers, like, all right, she should be in all the films now forever, because she's truly astonishing in that. And in this, it was the first time I've seen it since it came out, or first time I saw it since DVD. And I was just like, yeah, I mean, she's cute, but I didn't get it. This time I get, so I'm more on Wayne's side now after seeing this film the second time. But I think it's because I saw Hustlers and I see the work that she actually really did in this film, which is a lot more subtle.
Yeah.
But she's really good. And I think she should be in a lot more things going forward. I'd written her off. I think, whoever did Hustlers, I can't remember the name of the director, has almost done like a Moneyball thing and brought back this actor who people had previously kind of written off, but now she's front and center, you know, the way that Quentin Tarantino kind of did and Travolta and Wes Anderson kind of did.
Yeah,
I actually
pulled people out who people had written off. Go on, Wayne.
Sorry, I just find her like an alien with a perfect face. Like, it's this, like, she's 50 in Hustlers or something like that?
Yeah, something like that.
Ridiculous, ridiculous, amazing. But apart from that, you're right. Her chops as an actress, you could write it off with Demolition Man or whatever. You know, it wasn't that Sandra Bullock, sorry. Sorry, I missed that one. But
I wish you were close.
She's just made not very good films. Sweet. I had a look, and the only other thing that I've seen, I've not seen Hustlers yet, but the only other thing I've seen her in is Jersey Girl, and she obviously made that awful film with Ben Affleck. I kind of like Jersey Girl. I mean, it's all right.
She kind of had the same career as McConaughey. She kind of went into these no ranked rom-coms, didn't it? Yeah, Made in Manhattan kind of stuff. So hopefully she's going to fight her way out like Matthew McConaughey has done.
But I would love to see her in more stuff, absolutely.
I agreed.
Can we talk about the other cast members? Because we've got Catherine Keener, who is a welcome sight in any film, who's Adele with the little white bunny, who reveals the magician's trick of how you get sawn up in a box. And
but the legs are shiny. Big legs.
It's really funny. And Ving Rhames, who I think has kind of been resigned to Tom Cruise's sort of sidekick more recently. But, you know, in the 90s, he had these kind of small parts, and I just think he's really great in this. He's kind of like the conscience, isn't he, in this film? Mm-hmm. And he brings a lot of the humour, so I really like him in this. And then Don Cheadle as well, who is a welcome guest in any Soderbergh film.
Amazing.
He's also an ex-ER person as well. But the you know, the supporting cast is really great. So you've got, see,
Steve Zahn,
George, Luis Guzman as well, the one with the fake legs. And then there's a little Samuel L. cameo at the end. So, yeah, it's an ensemble cast as well. It's brilliant, which I think is one of the strengths of Soderbergh. You know, he really does work an ensemble cast really, really well.
So what are the Soderberghs you're referencing here or thinking about when you sort of mentioned
him? Definitely like the Ocean's films. Like, they are top there for bringing glittering stars together in a perfect way.
Are you a fan of the Ocean's films? Apart from the ensemble nature of them, yeah.
And David Holmes as well. This must be probably the first time they collaborated on a soundtrack. It's kind of got that David Holmes feel, which he did all the music for Oceans as well. But I like Soderbergh. I think he's done some really interesting films over the years. So I've got quite a lot of time for him.
I feel like Soderbergh does, honestly, for a while there, it was good film, bad film, good film, bad film. You know, he'd do like Solaris, and I'm like, what the hell was that? and then he'd do Traffic, you know, and then it's just... But he's what's cool about him is he's the one guy the studio's office is like, yeah, just do whatever you want, give him whatever money he wants, and he goes and he makes whatever mistakes if he does sometimes this and that, but he's all authentically him because it was like, here's an idea, and sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. So that's art, you know. I like that.
And yeah, it's the one of the most downloaded films of 2020 in his back catalog as well, Contagion. So
God, I can't watch that movie now.
Yeah,
that's nah, just too much. It does like a bit of a heist film, and one of the talking points I said to yourself was like bank robbery in films is as what kind of films do you think they reference that? Because I think Clooney is a good bank robber. Obviously gets caught because his car doesn't get started, but he doesn't ever pull out a gun. I think the first time he shoots someone is, as he says, is in this film, but he seems to be actually quite good at getting the money at least.
We've had a couple of heist films on before. It looks remarkably easy. I couldn't imagine walking into NatWest and being able to. NatWest is an English bank. I can imagine being able to walk into NatWest and talk someone into giving me. I mean, obviously, I don't look like George, but is it that easy?
Well, the views of Flick Watcher podcast do not reflect the Countdown Movie and TV Reviews podcast. First of all, easy to rob a bank.
By the way, it is easy. I used to work in one. I'm just saying.
But the views of Wayne do not reflect Paul.
Can I ask you guys about something? This is as a youngster when I saw this movie, this is the first thing I noticed when it came out. You're talking about Steven Soderbergh and his style and that sort of thing. So this thing he does where he freeze frames. Now hang on a sec, Paul, because Paul's about to shit on it. Yeah. Right? Okay. But what I'm gonna say to you is, like, at the time, that was hugely novel to me. I'm like, what's he doing? And he would even have the sound cue go boom like that, and then he would keep going, and I'm like, what is that? And then he kept on doing it and kept on doing it, and the entire movie is like that. It's almost like his
signature.
For that film only, though. And that's why I like him. He changes up all the time. So I think that looking at it now, it maybe dates the movie a little bit. You don't really swing that shit anymore as a director. What do you guys think?
Helen?
So I'd completely forgotten that happened. And then when it happened, I was like, oh, is the Wi-Fi? Oh, no, he does that. And I forgive it for its time, but I'm glad that it's not still a thing, I think.
It's, go on, please.
No, I mean, I it's one of the things I don't, it probably is so jaded, I don't even recall it really happening. It's just like a thing. Okay. And it, almost in the way that Quentin Tarantino pushed forward, like, even though he wasn't the first to do it, but like non-linear storytelling, it's like, oh, that's Quentin's thing. So it's now, that would have been talked about a lot of the time, but because 20 or so years on, that's just something that other directors have taken on board and gone, I like this. I'm going to make it part of my arsenal. It's not, for me, I'm like, I can't really have anything to say positive or negative about it.
I was just going to say that the editing in general is really interesting in this film, because I think I read that the car boot scene was originally like a one shot,
yes! But
it
didn't really
work. So the editing in that, I think, is really good, and I'm glad it's not a one shot, because the editing really gives it that kind of in the boot and the sexiness. And then again, when they meet up and have their thing, the editing in that is really great, and you've obviously got the snow, and you've got the cuts in between them having the conversation, and the hotel scene as well. And I think
so beautiful.
That adds to it. So in terms of not the kind of weird editing bit, but the good editing bit are really what kind of helps their sexiness, because I think had it been straight cuts, then it wouldn't have worked as well. And it's not as sexy, whereas, you know, the little editing makes it a bit more sexier.
Did any of you notice, though, that the blocking in the scenes is quite odd, like that restaurant scene? So yes. We have shots sort of over the shoulder almost of each of Clooney and J-Lo.
Yeah, dirty over.
And they're quite far away from each other. And then we cut to the wide or the mid-range shot, and they're nose to nose almost. And I'm like, that really threw me. And I'm not sure. That obviously has to be deliberate. That's not a mistake. You can't make that mistake deliberately and go, ooh, didn't notice that, the final cut. Oops.
Do you know how he shoots? Like, you were saying that, Helen, that, like, yes, it was originally a one shot. Steven, I've geeked out about this movie so much. I've heard Steven Soderbergh's director's commentary and stuff, and he said that he did initially make it entirely one shot, and then he tested it, and he said the scene just hung there. It derailed the entire movie because people went, what's happening now? You know, and it was really, really off-putting. That's why he had to go back, reshoot, and then actually do the back and forth cutting. So I like that. I don't know, while his style is dated, I think the editing itself in the with the Lompoc scenes and the time jumps, did you guys find that at all confusing?
No.
No?
Again, Quentin Tarantino, you know, non-linear stuff. It's just like, yeah, I understand this. Let's go.
It's fine. We go, okay, we're back here now. Yeah, that's fine.
Well, they color-coded it by making it yellow for Lompoc.
Yes. Well, for down south, wherever they were.
Yeah,
and then very blue and dark when they went up to Detroit. So,
yeah.
That
helped murky.
But yeah, it was that freeze frame, which is your cue to, oh, we're going back in time. Except there was also the cue to jump forward in time during the lovemaking scenes and that kind of stuff. So I'm like,
You're finding out how they got to bed while you're watching them in bed. That's a little fun. Yeah, no?
It's the freeze is what I don't like.
Oh, okay.
I do love the build-up to that. I want to talk about the do you buy them as a couple bit. But the build-up to them getting together that one night in heaven or whatever, because I love in this kind of post Me Too world, which should have been every day that we've existed as human beings. You have that scene where she sat by herself and those Gammon, those fucking horrible guys.
Yeah, just
one after
so hard to watch that almost. It's like, oh,
why, like, is that what I do?
You know, they're probably all married as well. They probably got, and all these things. You just kind of think, oh, for fuck's sake, men, you're just knobheads. Yeah.
Do you know?
It's just so infuriating. But you know, that happens so much. And that's probably that's nowhere near the worst end of the stick for this, is it?
Well, the fact that the way that scene is constructed and that shot is constructed is like the one guy comes over, he crashes and burns. The other guy comes over, you hate him more, he crashes and burns. And you're waiting for the third guy to come over. But then you see just Clooney's reflect. Oh, here comes that guy. Turns out it's Clooney. And then she's just so warm towards him because she's the guy he wants. And then it's like, that's wonderfully played. That's so cool. That's just great to watch.
It is a nice setup to that. But I was angry at men.
No, those guys should get shot and stuff.
Welcome to my world.
Yeah, we'll have to apologize. Yeah,
we hate ourselves. You must really hate us.
One thing, as you said, Paul, at the top of this, is buying them as a couple. And in cinema, that's where films... I mean, this is probably one reason it's worth revisiting your episode where you talk about cinematic and televisual couples, because sometimes it just doesn't work as relationships, even though they try and force it. Yep. And a recent example of where you have to really buy it, and it didn't really work for me, is A Shape of Water.
Wait, now, hang on. We're not supposed to talk about spoilers, right? But... Why didn't it work for you?
You mean the main relationship between a woman?
I do mean the main relationship in Shape of Water. I'm not going to go into it, but we're not going to give spoilers for other films. But that's,
I get it.
For me, it's like, oh, that's where it went, was it? Okay, fine.
I think what you meant to say was the Academy Award winning Shape of Water.
Who will remember that as being a good choice? I mean, anyway.
I love a lot about the film. I love everything. I love the way it's shot. I think that visually it's astonishing, and the general kind of story is astonishing, but where it goes, you know, the relationship, I'm just like...
it may be like, but maybe this will cure it a little bit. The book of this movie...
Oh, you're switching back to this. Okay.
Yeah. Oh, sorry.
Yep.
No, I'm just saying, like, Jack is older. Jack is a lot older than Karen Sisko.
Yeah.
And in the movie, they put them together because Steven Soderbergh did actually say, I don't want that trope of the old guy and the young girl anymore.
Good.
So that's something.
Well, he's still a fair bit older than she is.
He's like, what do you think? He's like 43?
He's 60 and she's 50. So...
Now.
Yeah. What?
Oh, yeah, 10 years. Now.
Okay, 10 years. Okay, so 10 years.
I've done better.
Okay.
That's fine.
But, I mean, if you look at, like, classic James Bond, like, Roger Moore's, like, 53, and this Bond girl's, like, 20, and that's just gross. Yes,
that's gross.
True.
And we've had bigger, more startling change. Well, like, in Manhattan, we've had more apparent age gaps with the younger women. But that kind of trope is, it just needs to stop.
I agree.
Continuing.
I agree. It's not a problem in this film. I'm just pointing out that there is an age difference, that's all.
Yeah.
I'm down.
they're both not really aged, that this could have worked at any point throughout their career and they still kind of would have looked right. Maybe it's something to do with their kind of, they've both got the same glowy skin tone.
Good
jeans, and they just, you know, they've got good teeth and their hair's good, and they just, you know, they both look great. One thing I wanted to say, because you going back to what you said, Wayne, about the subtle things with J-Lo's acting, and I think I completely forgot this scene, but one of the best scenes in it is where she goes around, I can't remember, is it Maurice? I can't remember the boxer's name, the really vile guy.
Yeah, yeah. That's Kenneth, yeah.
Kenneth, that was it. And he talks about the dog and what he likes to do.
That was dogs very difficult to listen to. Mm-hmm.
And her acting throughout that and how she is like amazing. I was like, this is great. This is great stuff. And obviously, he gets his comeuppance with a stick, but her reaction and how she reacts to him is amazing.
Yeah, he's
that.
Sorry, just saying her performance, you're right, the nuance of her performance, even in the boot, Foley's saying sort of roguishly charming things, I guess, in the context of that thing, right? But her, what she's doing is she's like disgusted by him, but then she smiles, and then she's like, oh, and then she starts engaging with him, and you can see her slowly going, just noticing him, noticing that she actually kind of likes him. Very cool.
And that scene, Helen, you're talking about, that's contained, was it Isaiah Washington?
Yeah.
Who's in the other TV, long-running TV, well, he was in the first few seasons before he got fired, of it was Grey's Anatomy, talking about other hospital dramas.
Yeah, okay.
And that also has my first appearance on rewatch of Viola Davis, was his sister who answers the door. I was like, I know that face.
Yes.
Oh my God. I didn't recognize her. Wow.
Yeah, I love the fact I brought something to an outside stand, even though you've seen the director's commentaries.
Yep. I forgot, mate.
to be fair, I think Isaiah Washington's chilling in that. He's disgrace. It's disgusting, and it makes
nobody
skin
makes
crawl.
You want to kill him so bad.
Yeah. You know? So when he gets his at the end of the film, you're like, yeah, hell yeah, and you instantly forgive Jack for murdering him because he did damn well deserves to die.
He stopped him from exactly
because they're out. He and Buddy are away. They're gone, and he says, he's gonna rape her. Isn't
That's
he?
Why George Clooney is basically Cary Grant. That's what's happening here. He's the gentleman thief. So he's the bomb. You gotta like him.
Yeah, he turns around to save it. And while we're on that topic then of the end of the film and that great last scene, I really do think the
mansion?
The culmination of this film is very well put together. Two things to note. One, White Boy Bob, one of the most hilarious deaths in movie history. Like, I thought through the whole film, and the moment he appeared, they were playing his klutziness and clumsiness. Not really. It's not till that
They're
night.
Setting up the, yeah.
He has two falls.
And one up the stairs right before as well.
And then when he falls and blows the top of his own head off, I know it sounds ridiculous and sadistic and weird of me, but God, I laughed hard.
No, because they cut to Clooney, and he's doing that head quizzically head dog cocking thing. Like, what the fuck is... Yeah, so that's cool. And we're all like, what? So that was awesome.
And then the other... I mean, he's not really a villain, but he kind of is in this last scene. Albert Brooks as Ripley. What kind of man, what kind of person sends his lover to the door to answer a weird knocking on the door late at night?
Clooney says that.
And he goes and hides in, and she's protecting him. Oh, he's on his summer retreat. I'm his maid. And what? No, you're not. What are you doing? Throw him under the bus. Save yourself.
Yeah, well, that was the thing. He actually asked him that, and he says, oh, well, she's supposed to not be here. Basically, we're covering for each other. That's why he let her
husband,
answer the door.
Whatever, blah, blah, blah.
So, like, still. But still, he didn't jump out and save her, did he now?
No.
Yeah, so there you go.
Disgraceful.
I guess that you don't feel sorry for him in the fact that he loses his diamonds because you have no sympathy for him as a character. So you're happy to write him off and not feel as though he got a raw deal with any of it.
In that scene, before we head to the scores, when they find the safe and they're shooting at it with these pistols.
Oh, God! That's so funny! It's like, you...
I mean, they could easily kill White Boy Bob then, because the bullet comes straight back through his face.
You're about to shoot it again? The second time? Like, what did you think of the first
time? Yeah, except with all the bullets in the glass walls around them.
That's right! They're like, if we hit this walls. Handle at the same time, what the...
they're not rocket science, these three.
So funny, though.
So is this a rom-com, basically, guys? This is where I land. It's comedic. It's got romance in it. What do you think?
Not for me.
Yeah?
I see it.
You could see it that way. I see it more as a thriller with romantic elements.
I mean, there's got to be a...
and comedic elements, too, as we've just discussed. But
I've seen quite a lot of rom-coms in my life, and I think if you're going to pass it off as a rom-com, this is the only one where one of the characters shoots themselves in the face falling up some stairs. I think when people get shot in the face, you kind of you're not really in romantic comedy territory.
And the many mentions of forced, rape, basically, also probably takes it out of...
Cools off the date, doesn't it? Yeah.
Yep.
Okay, fine.
But
fine.
Here's my one. I got one problem with the end of the film. Like, very illogical. I don't understand how Buddy gets away.
Why? So
the police all arrive, call the airports. He's got the diamonds. Buddy's not getting anywhere without being caught.
Maybe he's set up. Is he known to be a KA? No, he is, because they were looking for him as well.
She sees him go in.
What if he's got a fake passport that he set up before? It was the 90s. Uh-huh. It's fine. It's all good.
Yeah. Anyway, that was a sticking point for me.
There's a whole exit plan that obviously we don't get to see out because George doesn't make it to the exit plan. So Buddy is safe because he's going to follow the exit plan, which involves fake passports if needed, hideaways, another car, like costume changes. It's all been set up.
And Buddy,
Ving Rhames, hard to work into a costume change. But yeah, okay.
He'll be fine. He'll be fine.
Should we head to the scores, guys?
I'm Sam Clements, host of the 90 Minutes or Less Film Festival, another podcast in the Stripped Media family, a podcast that celebrates movies under 90 minutes long. Each episode, I'm joined by a special guest who selects a movie to join our prestigious lineup. Past guests have come from the worlds of film, television, music, food, comedy, and podcasting. Search for us now on the app you're currently listening to this podcast, or join us at 90minfilmfest.com.
Welcome to the Spreadsheet of Dreams, aka the FlixWatcher scoring system. All of our scores are out of five. You may have decimal places if you wish, and we will start with you, please, Wade, with your recommendability.
Five! Everyone should watch this movie, and everyone should be the kind of person who likes this movie.
No judgment whatsoever. I'm a little cooler on it. I'm going to give it a four. It is well recommended to the vast majority of people. I have no problem saying that. However, you do have to be able to suspend your disbelief in a significant amount. And if you don't love George Clooney the way that Helen and Wayne do, there may not be as much here for you.
Helen?
I don't know how you can not love George Clooney. I mean, he just has star quality, I think, and that's what really comes through in this. And it's really fun. One thing we didn't talk, which I want to talk briefly about, is when she is finally picked up, she has a fantasy about getting into a bath with him, which is the prelude to even more sexiness to come. Mm-hmm. Which I really like, because I think, okay, it's a little bit weird to fall in love with your kidnapper. Let's just
a little
get that out. This, you know, George has never killed anyone, and he was only robbing a small amount of money. And
agree. Give him a pass.
They don't hurt her. They're going to let her go. They're just, you know, they just need to remove her from the situation. So I forgive all that, and I buy into it 100%.
Agreed.
It's a really great adaptation of, what's his name?
Elmore Leonard.
Elmore Leonard book, which I really enjoy. And it was kind of, you know, it's really fun. It's flighty. It's got a great ensemble cast. And I specifically give it this recommendation because not enough people saw it when it came out. And it did really bomb. And everyone was like, we made a great movie, but it was just marketed probably as more of a rom-com than it should have been. And people were like, this is a romantic comedy. People get shot in the face.
People accept
it's a rom-com. This and When Harry Met Sally. Rom-com.
So yeah, I think this is, you know, this is class George Clooney. And I think, you know, J-Lo is fantastic in this. And they've got great chemistry. So I'm going to give it a five.
Yes!
I could do 4.8 here. It's a lot better than I thought it was going to be. And when I watched it the first time, I think we were just, when I was at university, someone put it on. It was when everyone had the small, like 14-inch TVs. Wasn't really paying attention. And I had written it off. So I'm really glad that you chose it, Wayne, because I probably would never watch it again. And I really did enjoy it. Yeah. So I will, and like Helen says, I think tell more people to watch it. It's good fun. It's just a lot more relaxed and entertaining than a lot of Soderbergh films. I think a lot of his films are very po-faced and almost straining to get something across. But I think this is just like, yeah, let's just have these guys fall in love, and that's fine. 4.8, repeat viewing score, Wayne.
Repeat viewing score, I'm going 4.8 for my repeat viewing score, simply because that damn effect is a little dated and it's hard to sell to people like Paul. So I'm just like, okay, you know what? I still will watch it again. I will watch it again now. I would happily watch it again now. All right. Yeah, I know, Paul. So it's just, I think that it's not the type, because it's such a, it's light on. It doesn't require, like, you know, that much of your attention, but you're just happy to enjoy it. So you can watch it again and again.
All right. Well, I'm significantly harder on it than that. I'm sorry to say that I watched this film 22 years ago and never felt the need to return to it until for this purpose, as you've chosen it. And I enjoyed it. Good watch. Happy to have seen it again. Won't watch it again in the next 22 years. So I'm going to put 2.5.
2.5, you dirty bastard. All right.
Helen.
So I don't know how many times I've seen it. I've definitely seen it at least once, maybe a couple of times. I think I probably had it on like VHS, maybe something like that. But like Kobe, it was one of the ones that I think I probably ended up watching more around sort of uni, university times. And then I think it's only recently been added to Netflix. I can't remember having seen it on there before. And I think you picked it pretty soon as it had been added. So I might have dug it out. The only thing is, it is over 2 hours, which is quite long for essentially not that much of a story. Not that it overstates its welcome, but it's quite a long film to watch regularly. I really enjoyed rewatching it. And if someone was to say, "Oh, I've never seen it, would you want to watch it?" I would say yes. I'm gonna go 4.
Boom.
Yeah, I'm gonna go for 3. I will happily watch it again now that I've unwritten it off. But how often will I watch it? Not often. I'm really looking forward to the rest of JLo's career. I'm really looking forward to seeing what other stuff Clooney does. I probably still will kind of hold him in lower esteem than he deserves. That's wholly my bad. I accept that. The cast of characters were, like you said, you dropped in Albert Brooks. Yeah, he was in that as well. Oh yeah, shit. Mm-hmm. So I'd look forward. Has Soderbergh come back now? Has he declared himself back? Because he took a bit of hiatus.
Oh, didn't he? That was it. He said he was retiring from film.
He did High Flying Bird and The Laundromat or whatever on Netflix in the last year or so. So yeah, he's back.
I'm thinking I'm back, John Wick. I know you're a fan, Paul. So yeah, I'm going to go for 3 because I'll happily watch it again, but I'm not sure what, more often than once every 22 years.
Every 18.
Wayne. Every human life, every adult life cycle of a human. Small screen score.
Small screen score. There's nothing too big or like massive action set pieces in here. I think you could happily watch this on a phone if you had to, but in my studio here, I can't fault it. So 5.
Okay. Predictably high. You're mostly right. I do agree. You don't lose a lot from watching on a small screen. And yes, you could watch this film on your phone, unlike some other films, which probably come to mind instantly. So yeah, I'll give it 4.2.
Helen.
If it wasn't for the small screen, this film would not have survived, because it wasn't until it kind of came out for rental that people watched it and went, "Hey, this is actually really good." George Clooney isn't just, a failed TV actor kind of thing. And it did kind of find its audience eventually, even though it took a little bit of time. So if it wasn't for the small screen, it would, we may not have had the careers that we got from George and Soderbergh. So I've only ever seen it on a small screen. And would I like to see it on a big screen? I think maybe I would be interested in seeing it as a double bill with Jackie Brown, because I think those two would work together.
More than a double bill.
Yeah, and you'd get the nice little Michael Keaton thing trailing through that. So for that, 4.5.
I'm going to go for 5. First time on a 14-inch cathode ray tube, 90s TV. Second time on a bigger TV, this flat screen. Yeah, I could not be bothered to watch this in the cinema. But to add to what you're telling Helen about it, I don't think that's necessarily a good thing, that without small screen it would have survived, because Taken came to everyone's attention on the small screen, and then we have Taken 2 and 3. Taken 1's fine. Taken 2 and 3 are poor films. That should have stopped there.
It's a blessing and sometimes it's a curse.
Yes, exactly. And also, I'm not a fan of Wayne's World.
Austin Powers.
Austin Powers 1, great, came to everyone's attention from TV. Everyone watched on DVD. But 3, for example, I can't deal with Goldman.
Great. Again.
I like 3. Oh well, what are you gonna do?
Not age well. But,
engagement score, Wayne.
Engagement score, okay. So I'm the guy who will always walk past this, see this, and then sit down and continue to watch it. So but I will understand. 4.8 for me. Engagement score.
Ludicrous. Look, I think this film starts, it's interesting enough how it starts. Why is George in the state that he's in, and then the flipping back and forth in time? But I really do feel like lags in the middle a lot, sets all the pieces into play. I don't think it's as engaging as it could be. So middling score again. At the end, like I said, great, and I enjoy the last 30 minutes of the film, so I'll go 3.3.
Helen?
So if you're used to, obviously, we call it the Tarantino non-linear style, then, you know, you'll get this pretty easily. But you do have to obviously pay a bit of attention, or else you're going to be like, well, how come he was in jail a minute ago and now he's in here? And
which jail as well? Yeah, which jail he's in.
This is at which jail. And then also, basically, it gives away where the diamonds are quite early on in the film. So there's little things, you know, keeping your eye on that. So it is, the more you pay attention to it, the more rewarding it's going to be. That said, if you kind of got it on in the background, you can kind of enjoy it and do that. So go for a 4 on an engagement.
I'm going to go for 4.8 here. I think, no, it's not 4.8, 3.8. I apologize. It doesn't need to be 2 and a bit hours long. And when you chose it, I was like, oh, I've not seen it for a while. And then lots of running time. I was like, is it? And it's not an onerous running time, but I just don't, even now re-seeing it, I think it could have been tied up, made tighter, like 20, 25 yeah. minutes shorter. And as Paul said, probably lags in the middle as a result of that. So it did, my attention did lag a bit, but we get an overall score of 4.23125, which is good. Very strong. Cheers for bringing it, Wayne. And we did ask people on Twitter, as we always do. Guys, do follow us on Twitter. We are at FlixWatcherPod, because every time we're about to record, we put a shout out, such as in this case, we're reviewing Out of Sight with Paul and Wayne at the Countdown PC. Have you seen it? Tell us your thoughts and your score out of 5 for a shout out on FlixWatcher. And we had a decent response here and some people battling as to which of their preferred JLo films. But Paul, since you're the one over at Countdown Pod in front of the screen, do you want to read us out with the first one? You can see.
Sure. I've got Professor J here at J Hunt 006 said 4 stars. The trunk sting still makes me sweat. And John Cheadle is at his best. Without a doubt, J-Lo's best.
John Cheadle.
John Cheadle. The little known brother of Don Cheadle.
Helen.
Previous guest we've had on, Easy Riders Raging Podcast, one of my all-time favourites, 5 out of 5. Off-the-chart chemistry from the leads, and goddamn, does it have a fantastic soundtrack.
I didn't notice the soundtrack.
I did.
Oh, it's beautiful. What? Yeah, it's great. Like it? That ding, 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 ding. That's good, man.
Right? It's cool as hell.
The way you relate it back to me then, just I need to put it on right now.
Everyone, this one is from Liam H. Dempsey, who says, the chemistry between Clooney and Lopez is off the scale. The lensing, editing, and sound design are impeccably gorgeous. Scott Frank's script has such a smooth lightness of touch to it, and the early promise Lopez shows is unreal. I want to watch it again now. I'm on your team, Liam.
And then we got Manchester Classic Film said, red hot chemistry between the leads, snappy dialogue, great direction, cool soundtrack. This film has a lot. 5 out of 5.
Whoa. Helen.
This one's from Paul Casey. I loved it. Stylish in the extreme. 2 good performances from George Clooney and Jennifer Lopez. Very sensual. Very cool. One of 3 great Elmore Leonard adaptations of the 90s. I'm going to say that he's probably going to give it 4 stars, seeing as there's no stars attached to that one.
No star rating there. And there was a bit of interaction. Gidget Von LaRue, who often replies to us, and I think they reply to you quite often as well. Brought in, I prefer the cell regards to J-Lo, but she's still great. And Professor J had a bit of back and forth between them, saying the cell is a highly overlooked movie, which I think this is. And, you know, J-Lo, hopefully she will do a lot more cool stuff in the future. Paul and Wayne, can you sign off by telling us where we can find you online, remind us of your podcast, and say goodbye to the listeners?
Absolutely. You can just find us by Googling The Countdown Podcast. You'll get all our socials and stuff like that. Or you can send us an email at thecountdownpodcast@gmail.com. I've loved being here. Thank you, guys. I was a little worried because your show is so classy compared to me.
Is it classy?
Classy as hell, classy, man.
No, it's been a pleasure. Thanks so much for having us on. We really appreciate the invite. It's been a great fun time.
It's been great to have you guys. Thank you for joining us.
Bye.
Bye.
Yep.
Enjoyed this episode of FlixWatcher Podcast? Why not leave us a 5-star review on iTunes? You can also follow us at FlixWatcherPod on Twitter, and we're at FlixWatcher on Instagram. Thanks as always to the Mighty People for their mighty, mighty tunes, and Ben from Rockwood Audio for his awesome editing skills. If you're looking to get your podcast edited as sweet as this, get in touch with Ben, and that's Rockwood, R-O-K-K Wood Audio. Tell them FlixWatcher sent you.
You just heard a Stripped Media production.